We discuss that classic work of swashbuckling, airships, and I guess kung fu, The Three Musketeers. Welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
And I'm Elliot Kalin.
Hey. Hey, guys.
Hey Dan.
What's up?
Hey, yourself.
Hey, what's happening?
Are we just meeting?
Yeah. Yeah. It's nice to see you.
Yeah. Yeah, did we bump into each other on a podcast somehow?
Yeah. Fancy meeting you here.
Somebody's in somebody's eardrums.
Fancy meeting you here in front of all of these microphones.
It's not that fancy. I'm wearing a short sleeve shirt.
Yeah.
Hands are covered with chicken grease.
Before we start,
yeah, we got something the show we need to clear tonight.
We gotta address a Flophouse scandal.
We gotta clear the air, provide a retraction, correction, and direction.
Yeah, a lot of people pointed out that last episode, the Instime,
and by a lot of people, a couple people
on the internet pointed out that in the Instime episode,
Intime,
we mistakenly referred to Olivia Wilde as Justin Timberlake's girlfriend.
And thereby the hamburger.
Mm-hmm. No, let's not bring back the hamburger.
No, actually, I was going to ask Stuart.
That is an insult to all humanity.
No. She was not his
all
girlfriend. She was not his girlfriend. She was his mother.
She was actually his mother.
Stuart, would you like to revise your hamburger snake analogy based on that? Go.
So I guess in this case, as somebody's already pointed out, that would make somebody's mom to be a hamburger, mm-hmm. and that your, I guess, girlfriend would be steak.
Fair enough.
Being Amanda Seyfried.
When before you were just judging the relative physical attractiveness of those two
actresses. Their hotness or their notness,
in the crudest possible manner.
Yeah.
In the least humane or human way.
Stewmane, yeah. I would probably...
I could go for some stewmane. Stewmane noodles.
You know what? This is, I think, a more complex question. I think I'm going to have to take some time.
Okay.
After we're done recording this, we'll do a Flophouse movie minute.
I don't...
About 10, 20 minutes where I actually kind of talk about this at length.
Yeah. Just 2 to 3 hours.
We'll get
into it.
Because you'll probably not be invited to speak at the TED conference. You'll have to give what your lecture would have been, which is hamburger steak.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When a woman is a hamburger or a steak.
And the properties of different types of hamburger moms.
Or steak girlfriends.
Steak burger girlfriends. Steak girlfriends. All kinds.
But I'd like...
I mean, this is a flaw. I mean, like, you know, in our defense, this is what happens.
In our defense, that movie was very dull.
In our defense,
and
this
we
is what happens
talking.
When a movie... one of the tropes of the movie is that everyone's 25 years old, so they're all the same age.
I think trope is the wrong word there.
But whatever. But but also, yes, you know, we were talking when the movie started.
One of the tripes of the movie.
We do talk during a lot of these films.
This I remember that one in particular. I had to ask you guys more than usual if you could shut up because I was having trouble hearing.
Well, a lot of people got sassy on the internet about how we missed this plot point. And to them, I have to say, why are you expecting us to be good at our jobs? I mean, haven't you been listening to this? Like, this is not...
So you were kind of angry about it.
No, I'm
he
just
was
like,
really
is,
pissed off.
Like, this is not
why
a...
Why do you even listen to this shit?
No. I think it's...
Look, I don't go down to where you listen to podcasts and slap the dick out of your ears.
I think it's emblematic of a basic misunderstanding about the Flophouse.
That we put any effort into it.
Thanks.
This is a podcast about movies.
It is.
Rather than a podcast about three dudes saying gibberish at each other.
Now there it is that too.
Yeah. I'm surprised at people getting up in arms about a factual error.
I don't know that this really cuts to the heart of the Flophouse the way you feel it does, but I am in both touched and impressed that we mean so much to people that they wanted to point out that we got it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Because the worst reaction is indifference. The more you know.
No, I think the worst reaction is people making fun of us on the internet. I think that's the worst reaction.
Look, I've been made fun of on the internet.
Yeah,
it's really easy to take.
All the time.
Constantly.
Yeah. Your genital size.
One of the regular comments that this podcast receives on message boards and things is how irritating my voice is.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that hilarious. So,
all right.
I have no. So if people make fun of us on the internet, it doesn't bother me that much.
Okay, fair enough. So,
but then again, I have a heart of stone. So
to sum up,
people are making fun of us.
Well, just you.
Okay.
To sum up for our fans, to sum up, we love you.
Yes.
And fuck you.
Yeah. Well,
also we love you.
We love you. You're perfect. Now change.
Yeah.
In the words of Broadway. But no, we'll pay closer attention to the movies we watch starting next time, because this time it was very hard to.
Yeah, this time we watched a little movie called Les Trois Mousquetaires. Or in
was
American,
that
I don't even know.
Is that Japanese?
Is.
The French, the Three
Wait,
Musketeers.
Oh,
the French Musketeers.
The French Musketeers.
In English, the title is The French Musketeers.
Also, there's three of them.
By the way, this is an
but
American movie
four.
That was made in English.
Yeah.
Shot in Bavaria, I believe.
We watched the Three Musketeers 2011 version.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Many films
by Paul W.S. Anderson.
Not Paul Thomas Anderson or Paul Wes Anderson,
a real hit maker.
Yeah.
Yeah, he made a lot of big movies like, Resident
He's
Evil?
Killed a lot of people, yep. is what you're thinking.
What else did he do, Paul Wes Anderson? Oh, he did the first Mortal Kombat movie, right?
He did Soldier, is that him?
Soldier was him, and Magnolia. There Will Be Blood, The Royal Tenenbaums.
Thomas Anderson, now Wes Anderson.
He wrote Winesburg, Ohio.
I don't even know what that reference is.
Sherwood Anderson.
Okay.
Read a book sometime. Come on.
Possibly The Three Musketeers by Alexander Dumas.
He's that gray-haired, probably gay anchorman. Is that Anderson Cooper? Sorry.
Oh. Well, his hair's more white. That's what threw me off.
That's what we're doing now, I guess.
Yeah. He's a Sean Connery movie about a bank robber trying to rob an apartment building. That's the Anderson tapes.
Wow.
Okay, so Three
too.
Musketeers. Elliot,
okay.
You usually pay attention to the movie the best.
I tried to this time.
Yeah, let's.
There's a lot of twists and turns
on
in
you
this
time,
right?
So if you fuck something up, it's just going to be your fault.
Oh, who, me?
This
okay.
movie had more twists and turns than a...
Than a rattlesnake in a jigsaw puzzle.
Exactly.
Now, The Three Musketeers is, of course, based on the popular candy bar of the same name. Mm-hmm. And it just goes to show, like, they're...
Who played Peanuts?
Peanuts was played by...
Hilary Swank.
Was played by the music of Vince Guaraldi.
Wow.
Hilary Swank played Peanuts. Yeah. And, of course...
Always a laugh.
Nougat was
Swank.
Played by Armin Mueller-Stahl. And Chocolate was played by, I don't know.
Ray Fiennes.
The late Roy Scheider. So we're in...
Purely digital performance, I would imagine, right? Mm-hmm. Or was that actually an exhumed corpse?
No, he shot it actually 30 years ago in case anyone ever made a movie of Three Musketeers. He wanted to be part of it. So he had it made in his spare time and they just
loved
it
the
out.
Material that much.
He just loved the candy that much. So it's 17th century France.
Okay.
Everyone's favorite place... Favorite time, and we're introduced to a foursome of adventurers: the Three Musketeers, Athos, Porthos, and Aramis, and Mila Jovovich as Milady. Now they're basically French ninjas who break into a place,
fringes,
if you will. Who I think that's Lady Fringe fans.
Mm-hmm.
They're basically French secret agents in the 17th century. They all have their quirky personalities. One of them is a strong man. One of them is
super religious.
Super religious, and the other one is...
A guy.
Just a guy. He's the leader of the group.
The Leonardo, if you will.
The Leonardo, the Cyclops, the Dan McCoy, the boring one. The mummy, if you will, of the group.
Wait, what?
And they
mummy?
They're in Venice, Italy, and they break into...
The mummy, the leader of the monsters?
No, but he's the most boring of them.
Okay.
The leader of the monsters is obviously Dracula, but he's super exciting. So.
Dracula.
What?
So anyway,
Dracula.
Yeah, let's leave your pronunciation of Dracula's name as if you were a recent Eastern European immigrant.
It is hilarious. I grant you that, Dan. But let's move on with the...
You're breaking new comedy ground with your Dracula character.
All right.
But so our musketeer friends and Mila Jovovich as Milady, they break into...
Mia Jovovich. I know this because Mia Jovovich has pronounced her own name on cosmetics commercials recently.
Did somebody put something in your drink? What's going on here?
Well, whiskey. Someone put whiskey in your drink, and that was me. But
do you have like a lot of pixie sticks before the recording?
Oh, did I?
Okay, let me continue.
Just don't say any more names.
So far, I'm almost through the first 2 minutes of the movie. So, Venice, Italy. The Three Musketeers break into Leonardo da Vinci's secret vault.
Wait. You got one for that, Leonardo da Vinci?
Italy.
That is, you are wasting our ears. This is a waste of ear. And they steal the plans for some kind of floating airship zeppelin type machine. Now, of course, to do that, they have to get past a bunch of booby traps, because this is a movie set in the past, made nowadays, so there's all sorts of steampunk shit
and nonsense.
A lot of slow motion fighting. And acrobatics.
Mia Jovovich sliding around with her cleavage exposed.
Yeah, and a lot of as you said, Stuart, like kind of wushu style fighting in medieval French fish markets.
Yeah.
So they steal the airship, but then, bum bum bum, they've been betrayed by Mila Jovovich and Orlando Bloom as the Duke of Buckingham. Their English nemesis, though everyone in the movie has an English accent, even if they're French.
He looks like a rock and roll vampire.
And Orlando Bloom looks like a rock and roll vampire and has the one hanging earring that all villains have in these movies. Drugs their wine to, I guess, put them to sleep for a little bit.
He's a crypto gay man, I guess, is the thing. Like it's like from an old movie.
Gay man who loves puzzles?
Yeah.
Is that like if Crypto the Superdog was a gay man?
No, I'm just saying, like it's like in an older movie where they're like coded. It's like,
yeah, so like
this is why you don't like this guy because he's effeminate.
So like the critic characters in Laura or All About
Eve,
right?
Exactly.
Okay.
And he likes puzzles.
Maybe
mainly Sudoku. But go on.
What?
Thanks, Stuart. I just needed some punctuation to separate me from Dan's incredibly stupid remark.
For the editing later.
Yeah. So the airship plans get stolen by England. Now it's 1 year later, and a young man, D'Artagnan, who's kind of a fourth-rate Shia LaBeouf character. He's really irritating and very unlikable.
Very cocksure. Like a third-rate Zac Efron.
And unlikable.
Yeah. Zac Efron. Yeah. See, I can do it. Nora
Zac Efron.
He's like a second-rate Nora Ephron. His father teaches him how to sword fight. His father's an ex-musketeer, and he says, you should go to Paris and be a musketeer. So D'Artagnan rides into Paris. 3 days later, he reaches Paris.
The scene is basically the exact same as if he was going to college. Like, I think they just cribbed it from any like college buddy comedy where this character is about to go party hard and get laid all the time.
Well, from the famous college movie, The Three Fratsketeers. But his dad tells him, make mistakes, have adventures, fall in love, get in trouble. And it's like, it's terrible advice. This is bad advice.
You just gave him a sword and told him to do that.
Yeah. So
neither a borrower nor lender be, to thine own self be true. This is the sort of advice that a young musketeer should get.
Yeah, sure.
From
Polonius.
Polonius. Someone who might get stabbed behind a curtain later on.
Someone who hiding behind a curtain will get stabbed, thus making them goofy.
Yep. Whose advice actually would be undercut by everything else about that character.
Yeah. So we watched Hamlet, and so he goes to Paris and proceeds to get into a lot of trouble and irritate all three of the musketeers, who challenge him to a duel. But then their duel is interrupted by the guardsmen who work for the Cardinal Richelieu, right?
Mm-hmm.
Richelieu? Best known from history. And
or those Monty Python
things. Where Michael Palin would play Cardinal Richelieu with that weird accent.
Yep.
We'd go, we, instead of we. I
wait
did that thing, yeah? So
wait,
they
well,
say.
Actually, wait, I mean, they like, use, wait, they had silly
people
accents
do say,
on Monty Python.
Yes,
people,
they did.
People do say, we. Though in France.
But the way
that's,
he says
that's
it
like,
is...
That's like our equivalent of yeah.
But the way he says it is particularly good.
No,
goofy.
It is funny.
So,
I'll give that to Michael Palin.
Okay.
And in the fight with the guardsmen, in which they kill a lot of people. Like, the musketeers...
Well, they team up. Like, initially they're going to kill this kid because he's an asshole.
It's like a Marvel
like,
team up.
Well, this kid's beating all these dudes to death. Like, he's killing all these guys. Well,
let's
we
join
help
in and help him kill these people.
And then the leader of the guards, played by one-eyed Mads Mikkelsen,
Mads Mikkelsen,
is like, just kill them, and then he leaves. Like, no, they're losing already.
Oh, I forgot that D'Artagnan has already run afoul of Mads Mikkelsen earlier in a scene that was cribbed from A Fistful of Dollars.
Yeah.
Where D'Artagnan tries to make Mads Mikkelsen apologize to D'Artagnan's horse for insulting it, but instead he gets his ass kicked by Mads Mikkelsen.
Well, bullet, basically.
Yeah, Mads Mikkelsen being shot. Shoots him when D'Artagnan pulls out a sword in a scene cribbed from Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Never bring a sword to a gunfight.
So there you go. It's the old double crib.
Yeah, double crib in one scene.
You got to double crib that thing for the baby's safety. You got to double crib it.
No, I like
but in case there's an oil spill.
Yeah.
In the baby.
Yep.
So the three musketeers team up with D'Artagnan. It's pretty clear.
No, if he gets out of one crib.
Yeah.
You need to add that second wall of defense.
Second layer of crib.
But if he gets out of the second crib.
Well, no one could foresee that.
That's never happened.
never really.
In the history of babies.
What is so different about the second crib that it's so much harder to get out of?
It's a
Does
laser
it have
crib.
Snakes in it?
Yeah, well.
Is it 100 feet high?
Yes. The second crib is planet Earth.
Whoa.
Think about that.
Yeah. So it's a space baby?
I'm not saying it isn't a space baby.
Yeah, this is a baby in like a space zoo, like aliens.
I think it's really telling of Elliot that he assumed that this wasn't a space baby.
Yeah.
I think it is telling of me, yeah. No, racism is really what it says about me.
Spacism?
Yeah, maybe spacism at best. So, Three Musketeers, is that where we're at? Anyway, I'll make a long story short. There's... The Cardinal and Mila Jovovich are plotting with the Duke of Buckingham to overthrow the French king through the elaborate plot that involves the stealing of a necklace.
Yeah.
It's really dumb.
Which is actually like not a million miles away from the original story.
Except the original story has to deal with trying to ruin the honor of an aristocrat, right. Whereas this has to do with the fight over plans for magic airships that shoot cannons and flame.
True.
Which are also both the best and worst thing about the movie, which we can talk about at some point. But there are a lot of very long scenes of the villains plotting with each other that break up the action scenes interminably. The musketeers go to France. The musketeers come back. There's an airship battle. There's a very long sword fight between Mad About Mads Mikkelsen and Shia Zach Arifin
mm-hmm.
guy. Yeah. D'Artagnan.
D'Artagnan!
And... there's a girl that D'Artagnan's in love with, and yep. they kiss or whatever.
She's really
she turns out to be one of the ladies in waiting to the queen of Austria. Oh man,
it's
so
really
much court intrigue.
Yeah, there's a lot of twists and turns that are all equally boring.
There's a weird chunk in the middle where it's just the musketeers kind of following around the King of England or King of France, and he's
no understandable
this really weird
understandable
hat.
Error because as you said, everyone. Has an English accent, even though this is in France. Everyone has an English accent other than Mila Jovovich, who has an American accent, and Christoph Waltz, who has his Christoph Waltz accent.
Yeah, Christoph Waltz plays Cardinal Richelieu, and it's maybe, if you saw...
The most Germanic Cardinal Richelieu.
But it, like, if you saw Inglourious Bastards, and I'm sure you did, I'm sure one of the things that struck you as it struck me was, I've never seen this guy before in anything, but he's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this guy is fantastic in every scene, Christoph Waltz. He's great. He should be in so many more movies. Like, he's fantastic. And then you
movies
see this.
Movies like The Green Hornet.
Movies like The Green Hornet and The Three Musketeers. And you see The Three Musketeers, and you were like, this is the worst actor I think I've ever seen in my life. He's really bad. He's, like, sleepwalking through the entire role, you know? Whereas Orlando Bloom is... Chewing up the scenery and spitting it out. Yeah. Orlando Bloom.
Who put a nickel in that guy?
It's like every
scene. No one thought I could do it, but I can. Check it out. Check me out.
It's Orlando Bloom seems to think that he is the star of the movie and is just like cutting loose. It's an Orlando Bloom we've never seen before.
You put a pompadour on Orlando Bloom. Apparently he becomes 20 times more interesting.
Yeah, he was
great.
Yeah, he has a goatee, and it's almost enough to make me think that Orlando Bloom's evil twin filled in for him and was just like, well, an actor I shall be. The play is the thing. Oh.
Time to ruin his reputation.
Yeah,
by overacting.
But the main plot of this movie is about trying to steal a necklace and plant some love letters so as to ruin the budding romance between the King of France and the Queen of Austria.
And I'm not sure how that helps England, since in the end, the true power seems to belong to the people with airships, and I don't know how breaking up this relationship affects who controls the airships.
Well,
I guess what it is
they lose faith in the king, is what they said, and then Cardinal Richelieu swoops in and takes over.
Wait, but they lose faith in the king for being cuckolded? Like, that's not really how royalty works.
Yeah.
It would just mean that, like, he would kill the queen of Austria.
He'd find
or
a new girl. Like, well, it's the king of France. He's probably banging like 18 broads. Hey, yeah. Oh!
I mean, he's a stallion.
As I was confused.
Oh, and
by
the French king in the movie is a dandy. Like, he's a dandyish guy who only cares about his clothes.
Well, also at the beginning of this movie, the Duke of Buckingham reveals himself as the bad guy, and then later on, he's like traipsing around, hanging out with the King of France, and the Musketeers are never like, "Hey, this fucker's the guy who stole the airship from us at the beginning
of
the
movie." He probably has diplomatic immunity.
Yeah, they never. Yep. But
so what they need to say was, "Your diplomatic immunity is about to be revoked," mm-hmm. and then shoot him.
Yeah, case closed.
I'm glad they're giving him warning.
Yeah,
like, well, so he can make plans.
Like, so if you want to get a lawyer, that's okay. Bang.
Mm-hmm.
I guess what really happened is that they took The Three Musketeers, a solid story that has survived many film adaptations. It's been around for 150 years, and decided to fill it with a bunch of steampunk spy nonsense. And that warped and twisted and distorted the story so that things that were of paramount importance in the original story seem trivial when it's like if you set, and like if you tried to set the story during World War II, and it was like, we've got to get those letters and the necklace back,
yeah.
or the atomic bomb might be dropped on us, and then they're dropping atomic bombs on each other.
Well, yeah,
it's like, well, the necklace and the letters really didn't mean very much, did they?
Yeah, once you introduce airships, after airships are involved, you're not going to care about where some jewelry is.
And it's one of the things where it's like, If the movie had only chosen to be either faithful to the story or totally over the top, stupid and bombastic, it could have been a lot of fun. Because by the end, when the villain airship arrives and it's got this huge, the figurehead on the front is literally like a Grim Reaper, mm-hmm. with a cross and a bishop's hat, and
with busty D'Artagnan's love interest strapped to it.
Awesome album cover.
Yeah, it's like a heavy metal album cover come to life. Like, if the movie lived up to that one shot, it would be a very fun movie. But instead, it's like these long stretches of dialogue where you can't – it's really boring. It's supposed to be, like, faux witty, but it's not witty at all. Mila Jovovich has a lot of screen time for a character who is not very important to the plot when it comes down to it.
Yeah, one of the things that I hated in terms of the, like
– terms of endearment?
In terms of, like, the weird updating of this movie was the
– No, it brought the whole movie down.
Was a scene where Mia Jovovich was playing the cat burglar character, like trying to steal the necklace in the first place, and they're like, okay, we can't have lasers back at this time, so what we're going to do is she's going to like throw her ribbon out in the air, and instead of being cut apart by lasers, it's going to be cut apart by razor-sharp wires that are strung up like lasers,
mm-hmm.
and she's still going to have to do that stupid fucking thing that happens in movies nowadays where she acrobatics her way through the
wires. Does some capoeira and dances through it all?
I don't think it was capoeira. It was more like one leap.
Yeah, well.
But it's also like there's this long cat burglar sequence where she's like fighting guys and sneaking through passages, and it's like, it feels like they tried to Ocean's 11 up Three Musketeers. Like, they had very little faith in the material, so they're like, let's put some sneaky spy robbery scenes in this. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, and I mean,
It was all very unnecessary.
We've already brought up that the guy who made the movie is married to Mia Jovovich.
Yeah.
Mia Jovovich, whatever. So, yeah.
Mila Jovovich.
He's going to put her in the movie a shitload.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or else when they get home, she's going to be mean to him.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
That's what I assume married life is like.
You're married. Like, you should know what married life is like.
Still learning.
Stuart still gets all his information from the Lockhorns. That's
Andy Cat.
That man has a rolling pin hovering behind his head at all times.
I just imagine Stuart coming home now with a cap over his eyes when, oh, love, Oh, I didn't mean to stay at the pub all night, love.
Mm-hmm. Selling hot fries, doing all kinds of shit.
So do you think in Andy Cappy is a hot fry salesman?
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's about the spokesperson. Man.
So he walks through the streets of London going, hot fries, hot fries, yeah, so get your hot fries.
I mean, he almost doesn't even have to say it anymore because people recognize him from the packaging.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. In that universe, how is he famous enough that he puts himself on the packaging?
Oh, well, because it's his company.
It seems like a...
When Henry Ford named his company Ford, it's not like people are like... Oh, yeah, Ford should use that name because he's famous. You get famous from putting your name on the package.
Now, are you arguing that he's not, like, that he doesn't show the wealth of being a popular hot fry salesman?
I don't think he's that wealthy from the hot fries. I think he gets by. I mean, hot fries are pretty expensive to make.
He also spends a lot of money on booze.
The profit
margin
is
all his money on pints down to the pub.
The profit margin is razor thin, and that all goes into drink.
Yeah.
No wonder his wife is mad at him all the time.
Because, I mean, I don't know if you guys have tasted hot fries, but they use only the finest ingredients. The margin is really,
yeah,
really
it's low. It's organic and artisanal. Those Andy Cab hot fries. That's why they sell them in vending machines.
They use only the finest hot when making those.
The finest hot and the purest bread fry. Only free-range pure bread fry.
There's a lot of giant models.
In Andy
movie?
Capp's Hot Fries?
No, in the movie we watched.
You mean like Tyra Banks?
No, like, wait, she's giant?
She's like 30 feet tall.
Okay.
Statuesque is the word you're looking for.
Yeah, she's a statue.
Well, there's a lot of small statues in this movie.
Yeah, one of the things I liked about it was when they segue between locations. They don't do it enough. They would turn into like a model map with model cities. And the camera would zoom over.
Yeah, it was like a 3D version of an old-timey map.
Yeah, or like a risk board.
Well, they did that early on, and then they stopped doing it.
Yeah, and I don't know why they stopped. Well, they didn't go to many other countries after, you know.
Just England.
okay, sorry. I mean, that's one. That's not many.
One thing I liked about this movie is how well-defined all the different characters were. I mean...
Well, they all had one personality.
I detect sarcasm there, Dan.
You have a finely tuned ear, Stuart, because
I
was intending
I could be a musketeer,
complete sincerity.
Musket ear?
Now that you say it, it does seem that Athos, what was he known for?
He's the leader. He has
if
no
you asked who's the boss, he's the boss.
He's like generally dour and sober-minded and glum.
And
he's the Dan.
Porthos was the muscular...
kind of awesome
so
one.
That's
yeah, the
so
lover
that's
of life, the Stuart.
Stuart. That's the Stuart. And
Aramis was the religious one.
So me, obviously.
I'm thinking you're more of a D'Artagnan.
And D'Artagnan was the irritating one.
I'm the cocky young asshole that nobody likes. Irritates everybody.
The guy who comes into town, pisses off the three musketeers, and then somehow worms his way into their affections.
Yeah,
if the shoe
by
fits.
Virtue of being less evil than the evil people,
and bags the busty broad. So it is me, I guess. Yeah,
yeah, that was great. I love how at the very end of the movie, the guy who D'Artagnan picked a fight with, played by Mads Mikkelsen.
Yeah.
They're getting in this sword fight, and
you may know him as Citrone from Flame and Citrone.
Yeah, or
the most
One
expensive
Eye
movie in Danish history.
And the three of us,
or One Eye from the Three Musketeers. You may
name,
know
right?
him from the Three Musketeers.
He played Rockford from the Cheese Fortune.
You know him as Bleedy Face from Casino Royale.
Le Chiffre.
Yeah, Bleedy Face. And the three of us the whole time were kind of rooting for the villain to
because he was way better.
Yeah. Oh.
You
yeah,
have
an
this
eye patch.
An eye patch, a ponytail. Mm-hmm. He was not irritating as shit. Like, yeah. He was way
he
better.
He kind of just shut up and did his thing.
I got to assume he designed that airship with that bitching mast.
Yeah.
Know, or bitching figurehead.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming he insisted on that.
Yeah. I assume he sketched it in the margin of his math notebook. Then he showed it to the engineers, and he said, put this on the front. Put this on the front and tie a babe to it.
Well, he didn't say that. He had to wait for them to stop oohing and aahing over it.
It's like, yeah, it's whatever. It's nothing. I just scribbled it out. Whatever.
You're
anyway.
Like, you're a really good drawer.
No, I'm all right. I'm all right. It's all about shading.
Could you draw something on the front of my notebook?
Yeah. How about, you know. Like a motorcycle driven by a skeleton?
Oh, that'd be awesome!
I forgot to mention the ending of the movie. Orlando Bloom disappears for roughly 100 hours of the film. And then at the end, Mila Jovovich has been... She tried to sneak away and escape. She was captured by the Three Musketeers, and then she jumped overboard off of their airship. Over the ocean.
She surely did.
Couple hundred feet.
Yeah, at least. Into the icy waters of whatever, the English Channel. At the very end of the movie, she wakes up. Orlando Bloom has rescued her from the English Channel, and he says, "We're going back to France to get what's mine." And you pull back, they're in a fleet of ships, an armada. You pull back even further, they've got an armada of airships floating above them, which begs the question, why the shit does he care about those other two airships if there's like 100 airships that he has?
He wants D'Artagnan back.
Oh, did he fall in love with D'Artagnan?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So the whole thing is to show force to get him back.
Yeah, yeah.
We haven't mentioned now, there's a fourth musketeer character, not an official musketeer, who is a...
I mean, wouldn't he be the fifth musketeer at this point?
Well, when D'Artagnan comes in, he bumps him down to five.
Okay.
He is a fat guy who takes care of the musketeers, is their housekeeper and cook and steward and butler, and they treat him like garbage, and they're mean to him for no reason. All he wants to do is be their friend and help them out. They do nothing but shit all over him.
He's kind of a Philip Seymour Hoffman in Twister character.
Or a Philip Seymour Hoffman in Boogie Nights character.
Yeah.
Or a Philip Seymour Hoffman in Magnolia character.
An early Philip Seymour Hoffman, not a late period Philip Seymour
but
Hoffman.
But it's one of those things where, like, if he was really clumsy or like a big buffoon, you could almost understand it. But he's not. He just happens to be fat.
He seems like to be a fairly capable guy. He has a key role in kidnapping Mia Jovovich later in the film. Yeah. So.
And if this were a wushu kung fu movie, his character would be called Fatty or Fatso, and they would treat him the exact same way.
Yes.
So he would be oddly fitting in that case.
Except that there, it would be so ridiculously over the top.
Because he would be a fat and clumsy and stupid.
He would be super clumsy, super... And there, in that kind of movie, the question is always, why do they keep this idiot around? Since all he does is screw things up. Whereas Three Musketeers, he literally takes care of them all the time. He's like the Alice from the Brady Bunch to their Three Musketeers.
He does not make any mistakes or errors.
Never, except he's like kind of loud when he talks sometimes. And at one point, he's airsick while he's on an airship. He's literally one of maybe the first seven people to ever have been on an airship.
True.
There's no way to prepare him for this experience. And he goes, "I hate air travel," which is the dumbest line, because he should still be in awe of the fact that he is hundreds of feet above the ground, floating through the air like a bird.
Yes.
I don't know. I mean, I've had new experiences where I go from awe to dislike very quickly.
But you're a glum bastard.
Yeah, sure.
But it's one of those things where to build up, it never helps build up a group of heroes if you give them a fat guy that they taunt for the entire movie for no reason.
Well, to make them look like bullies.
Okay.
Like, doctor bully assholes.
I mean, it's a taunting-based friendship on all sides, though.
But, like, they taunt... When the musketeers taunt each other, it's like, "Oh-ho, well, let's fence if you think you have the guts. Oh, no, you're the one who will be soiling his britches this time." Like, they know that they have a mutual respect for each other, so it's okay. But they have no respect for Fatso. Like, they're just mean to him. The undercurrent of every insult is, "You suck. You're so lucky we let you hang around with us."
Mm-hmm. And clean up our fucking shit. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And like, "Oh, fatty, you're the fattest."
But it makes the characters seem like bullies. D'Artagnan's an asshole.
He gets the last line of the movie, I think.
He does. Well, that's the other thing is the
while carrying food on both shoulders.
Before the to be continued scene that sets up the movie
fat.
For a
he
sequel.
Likes food.
How do you think he got that way, Dan?
That's logic.
The Musketeers say, "All for one and one for all." Their classic motto. Movie should end right there. Instead, it holds on them for a second, and then Fatty walks up and starts talking, and they all walk away in disgust. And Fatty,
you ruined the end of the movie.
And that's the end
Good
of the
work.
Movie. The end of the movie is not this heroic image of solidarity among heroes. It is Fatty making them all mad for some reason, and then he wanders off with like a giant fish on his arm because he's about to eat it, I guess.
Well, it's
like
he's going to be prepared.
Like
it's
Heathcliff,
a fish.
He's just going to dip it into his mouth and pull out a skeleton with a head on it.
Look, he's got a real joie de vivre. He enjoys life.
This is also after the Richelieu is behind the whole plot, but the Musketeers, in order to free themselves from, I guess, getting in trouble, make it look like Richelieu was behind the uncovering of the evil plot. So the movie ends with our heroes, the Musketeers, aiding the cause of an evil man and then making fun of a fat guy.
Yeah, an evil man who gives a final threatening speech to them while holding up his skirts with one hand.
Because he's wearing cardinal robes.
Yeah.
Well,
so intimidating.
A classic of literature.
Yeah, I don't think we got across how boring most of the movie is. It's super boring.
There's a lot of people talking about their motives and talking about stealing jewelry, and it doesn't really matter.
Everyone explains what they're going to do in elaborate detail. Then they do it, and then they explain to everybody what they just did. It is ridiculous.
I think it's time to render our final judgments.
Also, I would just mention this was one of Quentin Tarantino's top 10 movies of the year, according to his list.
Yeah, I think that's loyalty to Christoph Waltz and nothing else.
Green Hornet wasn't on the list.
I think he liked Green Hornet. Maybe it wasn't on the top list, but anyway.
It was in a private conversation.
Was this
Quint.
And Quint. You call him Quint? Yeah. You don't call him Tintar?
No, he likes it. He likes it because he's such a Tintar. Jaws fan.
Hey, that's my friend Tino. Quintino.
Was this a good bad movie, a bad bad movie, or a movie you kind of liked? Elliot, I'm going to go to you.
I would call this a bad bad movie that could have been a good bad movie. There are some scenes in it that are ridiculously silly and show an over-the-top style that could have been dumb and a lot of fun, but instead it was got bogged down and boring. So it's a bad bad movie, but it had potential that was lost, I would say.
Stu, what do you say?
Yeah, I'm gonna agree with Elliot. It's really, really on the fence there. I think if we'd had a little bit more of my, and I think Elliot's favorite character in the movie, and I think you liked him too, the sad bluesy guitar riff that they would play every time there was a sad scene.
The score of the movie is mostly like rousing, bombastic, normal movie score.
Or like goofy, like...
Or like doo-doo-doo, like the kind of music you would hear in the background of like like a goofy kids adventure, I guess.
Yeah, sure. Or a cartoon of some kind.
But then occasionally you'd get that like...
Yeah, it's the music that like the hard-boiled detective would hear in like,
whenever Murtaugh shows up or something.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's Murtaugh's theme.
When the hero of To Live and Die in L.A. is staring out over the rooftops of the city, like that's the music that plays in the Three Musketeers movie.
You want a little more of that.
Yeah, if I'd gotten a little more of that, it would have been a great, good movie.
It reminds me of the movie 300, which I enjoyed because it's totally stupid. And there's a moment when... they're fighting, and I remember seeing the theater going like, why is there not an electric guitar playing right now? And then the guitar kicked in, and it was like, oh, okay, good. They finally realized there is no reason in a movie this dumb to pretend that you're going to use music from this time period, you know, or from that, like, that general time period of the past, so classical music is okay. Like, yeah, throw some electric guitar in there. It's totally stupid.
You got English accents, check. You got classical music, check. It's old-timey time.
Everyone's English.
Yeah, I say this is a bad, bad movie because it sandwiches opening and closing scenes of like weird steampunk kung fu bullshit versions of Three Musketeers. And in between, it has boring versions of just the Three Musketeers story that we've all heard several times already.
Yeah.
So
we've eaten it.
The worst of both worlds.
In candy bar form.
Yeah.
I will. And Stuart, did you say what you said? What did you say? Bad, bad also?
I think it straddles the line. I think there's things about it that were good, bad, but not enough.
Not enough to make it worth watching.
Yeah.
I will say one thing that came up while we were watching that I think should be recorded for history in this podcast is my wish that there is a Danish teen heartthrob magazine that has Mads Mikkelsen on the cover, and the headline is Mad for Mads. Danish teens are mad for Mads.
Yeah, I mean, somebody's going to take that idea now, dude. You realize. Can you copyright
it? Look, I'm just putting it out in the world. Okay. Yeah, it's like my Jerry Cornelius. Just use it for whatever.
Yeah,
public domain automatically.
Yeah. Creative Commons, everyone.
Very Creative Commons. That's my wiki idea.
I'd like to...
Are we in the letters section, letters, Dan?
We are in the letters section, but first I'd like to thank for donations. I'd like to thank...
Hey,
Scott.
He likes donations, I guess.
I'd like to thank Gina L.
Hey.
Paul Michael A. Seems greedy to have two first names, but whatever. And Efren C.
He donated money to the podcast, Dan. Why are you biting his hand?
No, that's what...
Get that hand out of your mouth,
donate
Dan.
That's why they donated. It's like Don Rickles. They like the abuse.
Oh, okay. That's not true at all.
I don't think that's true at all.
Flophouse fans, write in and say if you like Dan abusing you when you are so very kind and generous enough to help support us in this endeavor. We appreciate it. Dan doesn't, but we do.
So this first letter from the Flophouse mailbag is...
Flophouse mailbag. Opening the letters, reading them up. Replying to them, sending them back. No sender at this address. Where did they move? Find it out. Did they leave a forwarding one?
Very active,
no, they didn't. Track it down. Use the internet. Public databases. I guess I'll pay the membership fee.
It's like a Man in Motion type version of Elliot's song.
Time to find them out. Send it back. Last known address was the one we already sent it to. I guess we'll wait to hear from them. They know where we are.
It's weird that the whole premise of this song is like that they're using snail mail when these are all coming in via email, but all right.
Not enough postage. Flophouse mailbag.
So this first letter...
Part two of the song. Okay, we got an idea of where they live now. Send it to them as a package. With some Flophouse merchandise. Do we have any? Not yet.
I don't understand why we anyone really on the internet on that. Would say it's that Elliot's irritating. Idea. I don't get where that idea got out there in the world.
Well, no, they said my voice was irritating. My personality is also irritating.
So this...
That's totally different.
This letter is titled Boo.
Ah! Oh, God. Oh, it's the scariest letter I've ever heard.
Wait. This letter's titled Boo.
Oh.
I mean, that's...
I mean, at least maybe, I know like, there's not a ghost maybe, writing us letters.
And it says, did Dan just recommend Real Steel?
He totally did.
The movie with a dancing kid who programs robots to dance with him as he dances and is very annoying?
That sounds pretty great, actually. They should have called it Robo-Dance.
Is it because of the buttitude of that mechanic girl who walks around in skimpy clothes? Because I'm pretty
Dan
sure...
Dan didn't even mention that.
Yeah.
Because I'm pretty sure her butt isn't even married, and as such should prove of no interest to Dan. I'd reluctantly agree.
Very good. Very good Flophouse continuity callback. Dan is only interested in the butts of married women.
I'd reluctantly agree to a spookily good bad for this, but a recommendation really steams my cheese. Boo. The rest is okay. We'll never listen again. All the best.
Really? Wow.
Peter, last name withheld.
So, this deal was not that real, is what he
said.
Well,
no, I gotta say, in my defense... I was recommending three movies very quickly that day.
Yeah. To in your defense, you were recommending just movies you would happen to watch on an airplane
Those were qualified recommendations. I had a shorter period of time, and I did, in fact, think to myself, should I mention that there is a very shitty aspect of the movie, which is the kid dancing and the robot dancing along
and
with
it? And why didn't you mention that there's a very shapely aspect to the movie?
I didn't find it as buttitudinal as this
Calipigian
gentleman did.
The correct term is Calipigian.
Evangeline Lilly plays the mechanic. You may remember her as Kate from Lost.
Is she from Neon Genesis Evangelion?
Yes.
Yes.
Is that the one where the spaceships transform into robots and use songs as weapons?
And against aliens, who are also angels somehow.
Okay.
Japan.
But I want to make it clear that I also was irritated by the dancing robot. But
because you hate joy?
I'm not a single issue voter, all right?
What about this scene in Short Circuit 2 where he dances with the little short circuit
robots?
That's
pretty awesome.
Okay, good. As long as you're not against all dancing robots.
Yeah. This second email is titled Three Questions for the Flophouse House Cat.
I hope the answer is
a lot of pressure.
Dear Flophouse House Cat. Meow, 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 meow. One. Meow, 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 meow.
Is this really gonna?
Two.
Okay, this is what we're doing now. I guess.
Is this the Killing Time podcast?
Meow, meow.
Are we short this week, Dan?
And three. Meow, 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 meow. Sincerely, Eric S.
Dan, have you ever heard what a cat sounds like?
Look, I'm just reading the email.
Like
it wasn't me.
Charlie Brown's mom.
That sounded like Charlie Brown's cat.
So yep. Those are three questions for the Flophouse House Cat.
Okay. Looks like he's going to answer them all.
All right.
I guess that's all of them.
Okay, yeah, that covers everything, I think. Yeah.
Fair enough.
He's leaving.
He just left on a skateboard with a slingshot hanging out his back pocket.
After spraying his urine all over us.
But in a cool way.
this
He gave us a hang 10 signal while he was spraying us with his urine.
This email is titled, no more mournful sighs. And it goes, dear floppers, there shall be no more mournful sighs from Dan when he finds out that the entirety of the seminal, epic, and classic movie Hots is now available on YouTube. And there's a YouTube link. And he says, now the cinematic masterpiece can be known to all with a simple interweb connection. Yours, Floppily, Chris, last name with Hots. P.S. Flophouse house cat should be spayed and or neutered for his, her own protection.
I agree.
it's too late. He has already littered America with his litter.
I did check on this link, which I'll stick on the webpage.
For reference, not for masturbation.
No, I was curious.
At how hard it would make you.
No, I know. I've seen Hots before. I'm familiar
with
it.
Too late. He's already seen it all. can't put their blouses back on.
No. They try, but
I've seen everything. I was surprised to find that YouTube apparently is now just allowing 80s TNA films to be uploaded unedited.
It's just totally uncut?
Yeah, no, the topless football game from the end of Hots is now intact.
Yeah, I think that falls under fair use for news.
Yeah.
That's why they can do that.
But that is good news. I don't think it's enough to quit me from sighing forevermore.
No, for that it would take real good news. By the way, Dan, have you heard the good news?
What is it?
Hots has risen.
Hots has risen indeed.
Hots is back.
I am excited that that's freely available to all.
Oh, yeah, finally. Yeah. Finally, that great resource will no longer be hidden behind the cruel lock and key of having to pay for it.
if you
well,
out
you
there,
don't have to waste you don't have to waste memory on your smartphone by downloading the movie. You can just watch it directly on YouTube.
If there are people in the world who are imagining,
people in the world now, finally, people in the third world in developing nations only need an internet access to watch Hots. I only hope the Chinese government doesn't block the Hots video the way it has so many other sites.
Across the nations, wondering to themselves, what would it be like if there was a football game with women who were topless?
Because Hots. That is unimaginable. There's no way to see that unless you actually watch it.
Hots will solve that issue for them. You know, they will know now. Lastly, email-wise.
So last email? Short mailbag.
From
short
Dave,
mailbag.
From Dave Elliott's brother, last name withheld.
Really, another one.
It's titled "Responding to Elliott's Mockery."
Oh man, see, it's like a fucking like a hobo. Like if he comes around, you give him money, he's gonna come around again in the future. Like we should just not make eye contact, guys.
I mean, I have to make eye contact with my brother at some point.
You can probably get around it.
All right. He writes. Dear yeah. Flophouse gang, my brother made a big point to tell me this past weekend that I should listen to the show because my letter sparked a raucous laughing fit as I became the butt of several jokes. I expected nothing less and was amused that Elliot referred to me as Dickipedia, considering that I've been called Davipedia multiple times due to my useless stores of crap. Even though Elliot has far more useless bullshit in his brain than I have in mine.
All the Kalen boys are garbage brains, that's true, and I have a lot of garbage in my brain.
However, there are a few issues in your discussion I must take umbrage with, which I'm sure you're all very interested
in. Look,
we know
Olivia Wilde was his mother and not his girlfriend, okay?
For one, Elliot said Steve Tisch didn't deserve either when I noted that he has won both the Best Picture Oscar and the Super Bowl. Well, Elliot might be right on the Oscar assumption, as Forrest Gump couldn't have been the best picture with such other strong candidates as Pulp Fiction, The Air Up There, and The Immortal Cabin Boy all coming out that year.
I don't believe The Air Up There was nominated. Cabin Boy was, and deserved to win.
That said, that
Chris Elliott earned his Best Actor Academy Award. The Air Up There.
That said, the 2007 and 2011 New York Giants, of which Steve Tisch was a co-owner, despite underwhelming regular season records, clearly proved on the field in both postseasons they were absolutely deserving.
What is this podcast about?
Super Bowl champions.
Is this a sports cast all of a sudden?
Secondly, Andy Rooney is not at all related to the family that owns the Pittsburgh Steelers. Neither is Art Carney. Lastly, when I bring up women I've dated to my brother, He regularly tells me he can't remember who exactly I'm talking about because there's so many of them. Well, that makes my dating life seem far more exciting than it actually is. It does make his comment that I put more effort into emailing the show than I do into dating specious at best. Given that this will almost certainly lead to Elliot making fun of me again,
yes,
rather than an honest, heartfelt mea culpa, I'm not entirely sure why I'm sending this email, but I look forward to hearing my brother defend himself. Sincerely, Dave, last name with hope.
Look, I'm sorry, Dave, that I mocked you. I'm glad that the Flophouse Ombudsman wrote in again to remind us what we got wrong about the things we care about the least, by which I mean sports. And no, my brother does have a very active romantic life. There you go.
He's a dynamo.
I've heard he may have even gotten to the dugout. Not first base exactly, but, you know, eventually there with girls.
It's kind of the side of first base, right?
Yeah.
He got a walk to first.
He got a walk to first once, and he got beaned once, so.
Man, we sound like a couple of sportsophiles.
Couple of sportsaniacs over here.
Sporting and J Sports.
No, but yeah, Dave can continue to write in and tell us what we got wrong in his role as unelected Flophouse proofreader.
I really don't think we should give him any more attention. She's going to keep coming back. So that was great. We had some laughs over letters.
Thanks
to L over L.
For
Mr. Sum It Up.
Summarizing.
It's a really kind of a lame Batman villain, Mr. Sum It Up, but, you know.
Well, Batman, you foiled all my goons, and now you're about to beat me up.
Oh, you've struck again, Mr. Sum It Up.
You've somehow ruined it. I was really looking forward to it until you spoiled what was about to happen.
Wait, Batman, before you read that New Yorker article, allow me to explain.
Oh, Mr. Sum It Up!
He lost his face in an electrical accident, but through transplant surgery, they gave him a new one. Well, now, what's even the point of me reading it, Sum It Up? Oh.
It's kind of like the contest ruiner, but for summarizing things.
For things that have a narrative.
Yeah.
Well, we've never seen them in the same room together, except we have when they teamed up to ruin contests and novels.
So this is the last segment. Everyone's favorite segment. If by everyone, I mean...
No one.
Yeah.
Then why do we keep doing it?
I don't know.
Okay.
People need a touch of good movie just so that we don't hate everything.
We need to send them out of the podcast singing a song from the podcast.
Yeah, song in their heart, smile on their face, mm-hmm. gum in their hair.
Oh, so if we talk about something and, we actually like.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, blood on their hands.
Blood on the tracks. So
on top of old spaghetti.
Under the
made it in America. In a New York minute.
Beneath the valley of the ultravictions.
Up above buildings.
Stuart,
over the
no,
river
I'm not
and through the woods.
I'm not playing this
under
game.
Under the rainbow. Inside, outside, upside down. Live in La Vida Loca.
Beyond the green door.
Beyond the green door? Just behind the green door.
No, beyond it.
Beyond the green door makes it seem like there's a fantasy world behind it. It's like Narnia. Some kind of porn Narnia.
Against all odds.
Beyond the green door lies enchantment and sex beyond your wildest imagination. Over the top.
Stuart.
Free toy inside.
Of all the movies,
Man
you've
of
seen,
La Mancha,
every movie I've ever seen.
Let's try to keep it recent, maybe.
What's a movie you might recommend to listeners?
Out of every single movie I've ever seen,
let's see movies if you world. Can maybe try to name a movie you haven't named before.
Okay, so John Castle Freak. Wait, shut up, guys.
Done. Head of the Family.
Baseball Maniac. Oh, I watched a movie recently. Stop joking, guys. This is serious.
Yeah, let's get serious for a moment.
Let's get serious, guys.
Let's sober up.
I watched a movie called The Innkeepers, directed by Ty West, the guy who directed
House of the Devil.
House of the Devil. Great movie that one of us recommended. Probably me, because I'm awesome. I recommend.
Yeah, that logic's fair. That
yeah,
like
I mean, that works.
You showed your work, yeah.
Innkeepers is about a a couple of people working in a bed and breakfast on the last weekend that it is open. And this bed and breakfast has a history of being haunted. And the two co-workers kind of try and have fun and at the same time figure out whether or not there's any truth to the ghost stories about the place with terrifying consequences. but it manages to be both funny and super atmospheric and, yeah, genuinely scary. So I recommend it. The Innkeepers.
Well, today I watched a one of those viral internet videos, fellows.
Hots.
It was called Hots.
And a topless football game. No, I saw a video.
Now, that's
someone...
sports you'll like.
Yeah,
they'll put
no,
you in the
Dave
seat.
Is going to write in and tell us how it wasn't regulation football. They didn't play by the rules. There's some byline in the football handbook that says you can't play topless.
No, I saw a video that someone put
There's
together.
There's nothing in the rule book that says you can't have boobs. I'll allow it.
You don't have to be an Amazon. So this is a video where someone did a composite thing of all of the rear window shots, the back courtyard shots of rear window. They stuck everything in the geographical place that it would have been, and they do like focus in and pull in and out of focus to like show, you know, if something wasn't happening at the time, I guess in the movie they would pull like they would blur that out and like pull focus just to the area where there actually was action. But what this video kind of made me realize was just, again, it made me realize how brilliant Alfred Hitchcock was spatially, like. To think of a movie where like this actually all works,
yeah.
Like if you composite all of these shots together, it makes geographic sense, and it makes.
Well, he was a space baby, so he had a real understanding of space, but it meant they needed two cribs.
But I feel like that's. I mean, hey, Alfred Hitchcock.
Are you fucking making fun of me for the space babies thing? I thought we dropped that.
It's a callback.
Alfred Hitchcock clearly doesn't need my endorsement, but like that is something that in modern thrillers don't have, which is this inherent. Like sense of geography,
mm-hmm.
You know, like, and this movie is airtight in terms of where everything is in relationship to everything else, and this video just drove it home again. And so I recommend going back and rewatching Rear Window, or if you've never seen it in the first place, watching it once, because it is one of the great Hollywood thrillers ever made.
Cool.
What do you have, Elliot?
I'm going to recommend two movies.
Bird on a Wire.
Bird on a Wire and Bird on a Wire 2, which hasn't been made yet, but here's the pitch. The bird is back, and so is Hans Wire, her arch nemesis.
I assume that's what this
I know we thought
about.
That Hans Wire died at the end of Bird on a Wire 1.
I did think that.
Bird on a Wire 2, The Return of Hans Wire, tells us differently. He now has his own brain inside a robot body. The bird is, of course, still a half-bird, half-woman, created by the evil scientist Dr. Wire. And she's trying to live her life, her fashion dreams, as a fashion designer in New York City. But Dr. Wire comes back to try to take her back to his evil menagerie.
Okay.
And Kurt Russell's in it, I guess.
Okay.
And he plays Snake Plissken, but we can't call him that because it's copyrighted. So instead his name is Lizard Plutkin. We still got
like
the
a
iPad.
Mad Magazine parody.
He still got the eye patch, the blue camo pants, the sleeveless shirt.
He's got two eye patches in the Mad Magazine version.
Yeah, that's right. Anyway, Bird on a Wire 2, The Return of Dr. Wire. So that's my first recommendation. No, two movies. Let's get serious for a moment. Two movies I saw recently. One is, the two of them are on very opposite ends of the scale in terms of subject matter. One is The Messenger. Not The Messenger, the Joan of Arc story starring Mila Jovovich, but The Messenger with Woody Harrelson about the soldiers who are tasked with notifying next of kin that they have lost someone in combat in Iraq or Afghanistan. And it's a very good, just kind of serious movie about that. And almost the best scenes of it are less the drama scenes because the story kind of runs where you think it's going to go, which is not necessarily a terrible thing, but the scenes where Woody Harrelson and I think it's, what, Ryan Phillippe?
Ben Foster?
Ben Foster, that's who it is. They all look the same to me. And Ben Foster are going over basically how to do this job and what the technical rules of it are and things like that. And it was just very well done. The other movie that I wanted to recommend on the totally opposite end of the scale, tone-wise, is a movie called The Good, the Bad, the Weird, which I don't have, that hasn't been recommended on this podcast before, right?
I don't think so.
I don't think so. Which was a Korean action adventure movie from a year or two ago, which was, I think, the highest budget Korean movie, South Korean movie up till that point, which is basically if you crossed The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Kung Fu Hustle, and Beyond Thunderdome, kind of, and set them in Manchuria in the 1930s, that's pretty much the movie. It's these three guys who are all after a treasure map, and they keep crossing paths, and there's a ton of enormous action scenes, and it was just a lot of fun and very over-the-top and silly and, like, action-y in the way that I hoped Three Musketeers would have been when I saw the commercials and saw that there was, like, a giant airship with fire cannons on it. So those are the movies I'd recommend. The Messenger and The Good, the Bad, the Weird. Don't necessarily watch them together because it would be like two extremes of hot and cold.
Well, not side by side.
Don't watch them at the same time. For one thing, The Good, the Bad, the Weird is like 20 minutes longer. So.
Oh, yeah. They sync up.
They sync up totally fine. But those were both movies that I appreciated recently or enjoyed recently.
Well, before we sign off, guys, we should plug our upcoming live Flophouse event on June the 8th at 92Y Tribeca.
Yep. Friday, June 8th at 8 p.m., I believe.
Should we reveal the film?
Should we reveal the film, or should we keep people guessing?
I don't care.
Stuart doesn't care.
Really noncommittal. We probably should have figured out whether or not we're going to reveal it before the podcast started.
Yeah, this is awkward that we're discussing this awkward, in front of everybody.
We'll save it for next time.
Like, let's just say we'll give people a clue. And the clue is that it stars James Remar.
Ooh.
So James Remar is the star of the film. And let's see. You know what? Let's reveal clues over the next couple months.
Oh, man.
We got till June.
Like Hansel and Gretel.
Let's hope the fucking contest ruiner doesn't show up and ruin it for us.
And we'll reveal the title in like May. And then we can promote it for that month. Sounds good. You know. So was it June 8th?
Yeah, clear your schedule. June 8th in New York City, 92Y Tribeca.
The same place that we held the Twin Sitters screening and the 12-round screening. And again, we're
both
co-presenting
sellout
it.
Or almost sellout crowds.
Let's just call them sellout crowds.
Yeah.
Both and co-presented
full
as before
sellouts.
By the I Love Bad Movies team of Xenia Yarosh and Matt Carman.
Uh-huh. A great zine if you want to pick it up online.
They put out a great zine.
A real double.
It's not available online.
And if
you
want to
buy it online.
And if you want to pick up that zine in person, they're actually hosting the Brooklyn Zine Fest on April 15th in Brooklyn,
Ooh.
In New York. I don't know the website. Google Brooklyn Zine Fest, I guess.
Yeah. A real professional operation we're running around here.
Yep. Well, anywho. But June 8th is the movie, so James Remar is in it.
So.
It's going to be hilarious.
That just leaves
sign-offs, right?
Sign-off.
Yeah.
So for the Flophouse.
Sign-off time. Time to sign off.
I've been
sign-off
Dan
time.
McCoy.
Why did he stop? I've been
Stuart. Off. Why did that throw you off?
No, why did you sing through his and not mine?
Because
I've been Stuart Wellington. There, I'm done. I'm out.
Okay.
I got it out.
And I'm Elliot Kalin.
Goodbye, everyone.
And boom in the can.
We're not even done yet. Why would you say that then?
All right, everyone.
Yeah.
We got it.
Wait, that's not how we start.
We got it, buddies.
We go, we got one. And Annie Potts hits that bell. Real big problem with real bad local ghosts. Cleaning up the town.
That's what I was doing. Oh, yeah.